since the show began almost 2 years ago. A Change of Tune has highlighted some of the best up-and-coming artists out of these West Virginia hills, with podcasty chats ranging from Bud Carroll to Ona, Roswell Kid to Coyotes and Boxes, and beyond. But those interviews have been a bit infrequent. And since West Virginia Day was this past month, and with the Change of Tune's second birthday just around the corner, we thought we'd do something special. 30 days, 30 brand new West Virginia music interviews that range from Morgantown alt-rockers and Parkersburg singer-songwriters to West Virginia music venues and regional artist management and beyond, all of which contribute to the state's wild and wonderful music scene. And today we are chatting with Morgantown singer-slash-songwriter-slash-rocker William Matheny, who joined a band and began touring when he was but a wee lad. Flash forward to today, and he has a great new release to his name, and he's primed to make his NPR music debut on Mountain Stage. We chatted with William about his experience playing music up in Mountaineer country, the friends he's made along the way in West Virginia, and what we can expect at his June 26th Mountain Stage. William Matheny, thank you so much for getting on the phone with me up in Morgantown, West Virginia. I assume you're up in Morgantown, West Virginia right now. Is that correct?
I am, yeah.
Cool. How many years have you been up in that area?
Well, I grew up here, basically. Not in Morgantown proper, but I've lived here my whole adult life, and I grew up about an hour south of here. So I've basically lived here since I was 18. So, yeah, I grew up in Mannington, West Virginia, which is in Marion County. It's kind of close to Fairmont.
Hmm.
So I've been up in this area the whole time.
What did your parents do when you were growing up? Were they musicians? Were they just normal, everyday people?
My dad is. I guess kind of starting sort of way back from that, my great-grandfather was kind of a regionally known gospel singer. And then his son, my grandfather, was kind of a regionally known country singer.
Hmm.
And he had a band with you know, some of his friends, one of which included, this was my grandfather, Mansfield Matheny. And he had a band called the Rhythm Rascals. And they recorded a 78. This would have been like in the late 40s or early 50s. But one of the guys in that band was this, it was sort of a, I guess, in some circles, like a very well-known guy named Russell Fluharty, who's sort of like known amongst like the old-time community as the Dulcimer Man. He was like a fairly famous hammer dulcimer player, but in this group, he just played upright bass and did comedy. But anyway, my grandfather was the lead singer of the group and played rhythm guitar. And then my dad also plays, and he was in a really good bluegrass band in the late 70s, early 80s. And they, you know, they kind of traveled around and did some stuff. They recorded an album. And then they all, you know, got married, had kids. So basically I broke up the band is what I'm saying.
So you're the Yoko Ono is what you're trying to say?
Like, yeah, I'm the Yoko Ono of the situation. Actually, I don't know, there were like five Yoko Onos here. And they're all, you know, like 30 now. Anyway, yeah, he still plays, plays guitar in the church choir, and, he taught me how to play music, and we actually played in bands together when I was a kid.
Aww.
Like, we played in, like, cover bands when I was, you know, an adolescent and kind of early high school.
Did you guys wear the same outfits? Were you, like, father, son, like, you were in, like, little button-down, like, blue jean shirts and cowboy boots, and you had the same kind of guitar, but, like, a miniaturized version of it? isn't that a cute idea?
That.
That's a cute idea. That would have been really cute.
We didn't have a marketer, so we just had to do it ourselves. We were just wearing regular clothes.
Oh, well, that's still sweet. So did you guys, did you have a name for what you were doing, or was it just you jamming with your dad?
No, actually, it was kind of a long series of different bands, and I really have to give my father, like, a ton of credit on this, because, and I always, like, stress this with people that, my parents weren't, like, stage parents at all. This was all my idea, you know. But I'd been playing guitar, and I told my father that I wanted, like, I told my parents that I wanted, you know, to play in a band. And, you know, when you're a small kid in a really small town, like, you may know some people who play music, maybe you don't, you know. And my dad just kind of got on the phone and called people and said, hey, you know, my son, like, plays music, and who wants to start doing stuff. Would you be interested in joining a band? And which, like, now is an, like, I didn't think anything of it at the time, you know, but I'm incredibly grateful for it now, just because I'm imagining, like, being an adult, getting that call from, like, one of your acquaintances, and they're like, hey, would you join a band with my 9-year-old son? You know, I would obviously be incredibly skeptical of that. So, yeah, it was just kind of, you know, the usual, like, thing of, like, you know, doing, like, Rolling Stones covers and Beatles songs and, you know, in bars on Friday and Saturday nights. It wasn't like, you know, we didn't really make albums per se or anything like that.
So who joined you when you were a 9-year-old guitar player? Like, which of your dad's friends helped you along with that?
Well, there was this guy named Eric Fox and his wife Ginger. And then we had kind of a long series of drummers, like a bunch of different guys. And I kind of did that sort of all through, like, middle school and stuff. And then when I was, I guess I would have been, like, 14, and I sort of, that's kind of when I sort of realized what, like, independent music was. And that mainly happened when we got the internet at our house. Because, like, up to that point, I didn't really know that, you know, there was, like, a tier of music in between, like, I don't know, like Kiss and then like your roommate who plays guitar. You know, I thought it was just kind of, you know, kind of one or the other. And then I realized that there were all of these different bands that, you know, were doing their own music and putting it out on labels and touring and all of that stuff. And I really wanted to get out of the situation I was in then of like playing in cover bands and stuff, because it seemed like a real dead end, which it is, you know. And I grew up, like I said, about an hour south of Morgantown, and by that point, I'd kind of become acquainted with the scene up here and all of the bands that were up here and making music and doing albums and touring and stuff, and I really wanted to get involved with that. And at that point, I started playing with this guy, Brian Porterfield, who had a band in the 90s called Cheap Trucker Speed. And I really wanted to, Brian doesn't really play anymore, but, you know, I kind of say this to anyone who listens, that he's probably the best songwriter that I know personally, in terms of people that I can, like, call on the phone and say hello. He's just really, really great. And, you know, I think kind of like sort of one of those unknown treasure people. And I wanted to join his band, and I looked him up in the phone book. And, I mean, we knew some mutual people, so it wasn't totally like a cold call. But I looked him up in the phone book and kind of tried to pitch myself that I should play guitar in his group. And he didn't – it took a few phone calls, but eventually I joined. But I joined as his drummer instead, which I was totally fine with. I just wanted to get involved. And that was kind of like my first – like that was kind of my first proper band that I was in that was doing original material and doing stuff.
What were those phone calls like of you trying to convince him, hey, just trust me, like, I want to join your band, I can make it, I can show up and do rehearsal?
Oh, awkward as hell. It was really weird, you know. He was such a good sport about it. I have to give him credit.
So you got into the band and you started doing original material with them. When was the point where you kind of moved a little bit more front and center in your music career?
I did that for like 2 years, basically. It was like the second half of high school was when I played with Brian's band. And it sort of actually coincided, like, that band stopped playing like 3 or 4 months after I graduated from high school. So it was pretty, and I turned 18 at the same time. And that was sort of when I did it. Like, I'd been writing songs the whole time. I just wasn't really, like, I you know, I played them a little bit, but not really. It wasn't my main focus. And then by that point, I was kind of itching to get back to playing guitar, and I wanted to have a band that was doing my own material and stuff. So that was really when I started doing that. And then I spent, you know, I guess my young adult years, I didn't go to college. Instead, I just moved to a college town and joined like 5 bands. So I kind of didn't say no to any gig for a really long time. Like, and I was playing with a bunch of different groups, and it was really a wonderful learning experience. I'm super happy about doing it because it really meant that I could, you know, I could learn to play a lot of different genres of music and have a really good time while doing it. And there's really kind of no way to, I guess there's kind of no shortcut into doing that. Like, you really should just sort of jump, you know, I wouldn't recommend the same thing for, like, if you want to be a brain surgeon, you know, you should probably study that before really jumping in with both feet. But,
So along the way, I mean, you were part of so many bands. How did you support yourself in a college town by, you know, playing music?
I washed dishes and then worked at a UPS store. I only washed dishes for like 4 months, but I got so many great stories from it. So I kind of like worked my way through kind of a long series of bands of, you know, varying quality and seriousness and all of this. And then in 2008, I joined Southeast Engine. And I did that from like 2008 to 2012.
When you were performing up in Morgantown at that time, were the venues easy to play in? Were the audiences that cooperative, or were they, you know, paying attention to you all?
Oh yeah, that was a really, like, looking back on it, and I don't know how much of this is you know, the golden glow of nostalgia, because we're looking at like a period of time that's like 10 years ago now. I remember the scene being really good at that point. Like, there were multiple venues you could play. There were, I mean, at that time, like 2004, 2006, I could think of like 10 or 12 bands in town that were really, really great at that point. So there was a lot of really good stuff happening, and it was a really fun community to be a part of, for sure.
How has 123 Pleasant Street played a role in your music career up there in Morgantown?
Oh, man, well, it's the, you know, it's obviously the biggest venue here in terms of like ones that actually do things consistently. So I've played a 123 for like, gosh, oh man, I want to say like 16 or 17 years at this point. So it's been a really, you know, it's been a really long time, and I've always really enjoyed it. It's still my favorite club. You know, I think whatever place that you really latch onto when you're kind of young and impressionable, it's always going to be that gold standard for you. You know, every time I go out of town, I'm just kind of constantly in my mind comparing it to 123.
Well, it seems like 123 is the kind of gem of the Morgantown music scene. It's the thing that kind of brings everyone together, the kind of safe haven. Otherwise, what other venues are up there that you've played at or that have, you know, played a role in your career?
Well, Jeans is really great. It's this really this nice neighborhood bar. It's like a block away from my house. And the owner, Al, is just one of the best people, just one of the best people in the world. He is solid gold, just a great human being. And it's not, you know, it's a very, very small place. You know, they have a little PA, and it almost feels like you're playing a house party kind of when you play there more than anything. And it's really great. And he's also been very cool about getting in a lot of really good touring people. I mean, Sharon Van Etten played there once.
Oh, wow.
Lydia Lovelace has played there. John Paul Keith. Webb Wilder. Let's see who else. Yeah, Jeans is wonderful, too. That place is really, really great. And then, you know, there are obviously other places, but that's kind of more of, you know, the kind of thing where you're sort of, you know, you're moving tables out of the way to, like, set up your gear, and it's not really, you know, I wouldn't really call it like a proper venue really or anything like that.
Yeah. Now, that just reminded me, you opened for Lucero when they were up in Morgantown, didn't you?
I've done that a few times. Actually, because you were asking about the, you know, sort of when I made the transition to kind of being more upfront about playing like my own material, the first time I ever did a show under my own name playing my own songs was opening for Lucero. And this was the first time that they played there. And so this will tell you how long ago it was. Like, it was a $5 cover charge at that point. And it was like a Wednesday night, and there were like 20 people there or something. I think they were touring on That Much Further West. And they played like, I want to say they played like 3 hours. It was a marathon kind of thing. And they were so cool. They were just, I mean, immediately just really, really playing with him again like a year later, and I've done it off and on, I guess, the whole time. And then I played with Ben Nichols last year, I guess.
And was that recorded for U92, or one of them was recorded for U92, and that was put on like a compilation or some CD release?
Oh, yeah, that was the second time was this thing called, there were these two DJs who were there at the time, Nathan Miller and Matt Sidorko, who are great people. I don't know where Matt is these days, but anyway, they had this idea that they were going to do a Habitat for Humanity benefit. And the whole thing was that they were going to be on the air for 72 hours straight and not sleep the whole time. And so they were, like, people were going to pledge, I think it was like a pledging money thing, like you're like a Relay for Life, or like if you, I'll give you 10 cents a mile, you know, or whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think it was like that. And so they were raising money this whole time. And then me and this other band called The Emergency, who were really popular here at the time, we did a split 7-inch single, and U92 paid for it. And then the release show was like the end of the radio marathon. And, like, I guess these guys didn't sleep and they went down to the bar after that. But then Lucero played as well that night. And by that point, they were, you know, well on their way to becoming a much bigger deal than they were when they had played there, you know, just a few months before, you know, to 20 people. So that was really fun. And those singles are still around. I think they have like 1,000 of them still at the radio station. I don't know. I have no idea how many of them they made. It seems to be an endless supply.
I feel like I've either seen the cover art for it, or maybe I don't think you sold it at one of your shows, but maybe you had a copy or something?
I guess whenever I find myself having them, I sell them. I should probably, you know, I should probably burn them. But, yeah, they're still around. The Emergency song is great. Mine is, you know, I could do better now.
Did you learn anything from kind of being around bands like Lucero, who obviously went on to do really big things? Did that kind of give you experience?
Sure. Yeah, I mean, I guess it's really not unlike other career paths when you see people who are doing what you want to be doing and you get a chance to sort of talk to them about how you get there, because I really had no idea. I mean, I knew I wanted to play music, and I knew I wanted to tour, and I wanted to release albums and do all of that kind of thing, but it's not really like you can fill out a job application for that. So I was able to talk to them about sort of like, well, how are you doing this or whatever? And even then, like I was like 18 or 19, and you know, even then it seemed like that what they were doing was such a huge deal to me. And really that all they could tell you, and it's sort of all I could tell anyone else as well, is just like, the big thing is just don't quit. And that will get you further than just about any other thing you can do. Like, inherently, that's going to get you farther than anything else. And then after that, you know, you just have to get out of town and play in as many places as you can. And that can feel really discouraging at first, especially when you don't know what that's supposed to be like, you know, because you get used to, you know, if you're playing popular shows in your hometown, you kind of immediately think, well, everything should be like this, you know. Sorry, that's my dog. And so immediately you're like, well, I should be playing to 200 people every night. There must be something wrong with what I'm doing, because you drove 3 hours away and you played to the bartender. And it's really nice to hear it from someone who's been there, that that's just kind of the natural order of things. Like, you're going to do this, and it's not going to be as much fun as playing in your hometown is initially, but if you just keep coming back, it will. It can feel like you're working in a vacuum sometimes, but more importantly, you're not. And while it may not seem like you're having an impression, you really are. And the best thing you can do for yourself is to just stay with it.
Well, you've really persevered, I feel like, with this, you performing in West Virginia and leading now to your new release. It's still untitled from what I hear, but it, I guess, will be coming out later this summer.
Oh, the name of the record is Strange Constellation.
Is it? Okay.
Yeah.
Because I talked to him and I was like, Ian, what's the name of the record? He's like, oh, no. And I was like, all right, Ian, that's fine. That was a couple days ago. You can get on him about that.
The cover art is actually just going to be a sort of silhouette portrait of Ian.
Is it going Please let it be one. Please. By Josh Saul. Is that going to be the photo?
I'd like to do like a tintype. Just a tintype of Ian is going to be the cover.
No, actually, I want it to be the one he took of you and Bud Carroll at the Empty Glass in Charleston, where Bud is getting some major air, and that's the one that's circulating everywhere of you guys just performing there. I guess it was like a month or two back. That was a really good
photo.
When
it's right, it's right.
Yeah, you did a good job with that photo. But yeah, I mean, you've persevered, and you have a new release that's coming out, Strange Constellations. And you're talking about a vacuum, but I feel like you've made so many connections now with so many people in the scene. I mean, just for the record itself, just to name like one or two people. I mean, you have Bud Carroll from down in Huntington. You have Adam Meisterhans from Crazy Popular Roswell Kid. Haley Slagle from Morgantown. Ona's Brad Goodall. Good Wolf's Tyler Grady. The Boys from Of the Dell. Rod Elkins from Tyler Childers and the Food Stamps is on it, as well as Ian Thornton, who's obviously just a big part of the Huntington music scene and your promoter manager. And then even Max Nolte from Brain Rap Productions and Ona helped with producing or recording the music video for one of your singles.
Actually, Zach Nichols from Frontier Ruckus is on the album too. He played the horns.
Yeah, and it sounds like you just really hate West Virginians by the amount of people that you put on your record.
Yeah, you know, I keep good company. What can I say?
And I also forgot Shane. Is it Shane Keister? Shane Kester?
Shane Keister. Yeah, Shane is from West Virginia originally.
Yeah, I saw he has a Wikipedia page that says that he's from Huntington. He's worked with Elvis Presley. And that he scored the Ernest Goes to Camp movie.
Yeah. And there's a really good chance that if you're listening to country radio from the 70s, 80s, early 90s, you're probably hearing Shane. He's played with everyone. Like, the guy's discography is just insane. But he was in Elvis's band for like 2 years.
That's crazy. That's great. How did you get hooked up with him?
Bud knows him. And, you know, as Clint Eastwood would say, man's got to know his limitations. And we got into recording it, and we knew that we wanted a lot of keyboards on the record in terms of the kind of classic sounds you think of, like upright piano and, you know, Hammond organ, Fender Rhodes, Wurlitzer. And, you know, I do a lot of that, and Bud does a lot of that. And then we got to about half the record, and we really felt like we needed to bring in a ringer. And it was one of these things where it would have taken one of us, you know, it would have taken us 12 hours to do what Shane did in 20 minutes. And Bud got a hold of him and he agreed to do it. And we went down to Nashville one day and he just came over and, you know, knocked everything out of the park, knew exactly what we wanted. The first take, you know, would have been more than fantastic. And, you know, the third take was even better. And he told us some great stories kind of in between all of this because he's obviously seen everything. Yeah, he has actual Elvis anecdotes. I mean, who has that? Not very many people.
No, that's crazy. And then the guy's from Huntington. Went from Huntington probably to Nashville and made a career for himself. So it's crazy. But I mean, yeah, going back to that, I mean, you have him and you have so many others involved in the new record. And most of them aren't really from, a few of them are from the Morgantown area. But most of them are from the southern part of the state. So, and of course, you know, Adam Meisterhans, who's from kind of, you know, Panhandle. But you bring in all aspects of kind of West Virginia music scene into this new release. How did that come about?
I guess, first of all, I'm really happy we did it, just because it's really great to get your friends involved. You know, that's always a great time. But when we started recording it, there wasn't really a concrete band lineup. You know, it was this thing where, you know, Southeast Engine had stopped, and I knew I wanted to make a record, and, you know, I wanted to get back to doing what, you know, what I do. And at the time, Adam was, I think, hanging out with Bud, trying to make a record of his own, actually, with the working title of Best Vibration, which I really just needed to point that out. It's great. And I guess, you know, Adam just kind of sent me a text while he was down there saying, like, hey, we were really talking about how we'd like to, you know, it would be a lot of fun for the three of us to work on a record of yours. And that seemed like as good of an idea as any. And we went down and we didn't really know what any of us would be playing on it, you know, because while we made it, you know, Adam played most of the bass on the record and Bud does the drums on it. And I used to joke and tell people that you know, if you're going to make an album, really the best thing you can do is find the two best guitar players you know and have them play something else. Because it seems just kind of crazy that both of those guys are so good, yet they're not, you know, like, they weren't, like, playing guitar in the initial lineup of the band. And, you know, we did some shows while we started making the album, and we laid down the basic tracks, and then things kind of started to coalesce where we got, you know, we brought Rod and Ian on board, and that way we could move Bud and Adam up to guitar, and then we have, you know, obviously a really, really amazing drummer and a really, really amazing bass player there too. So everyone's doing what they, you know, what they really excel at, you know. And then at the same time, you know, once we had the basic tracks, you know, we just started having ideas about what we wanted to put on the songs. And if it was something that we either, you know, honestly, it was more than anything, like, we could either hear something that was going to be wonderful where, oh, this is totally the person for the job, or we just really wanted to get them involved, you know, like, you know, I don't know, we wanted to get Brad Goodall on there, we wanted to get Rod, you know, playing percussion. It was good to get Ian involved, you know, to get him on the record for real. And beyond that, like, it was really great to get Tyler Grady and Haley Slagle to sing on it, and it was fun to get the Del Boys on there too. And my deepest apologies if I'm missing anyone here in the roundup of things. I guess Zach Nichols from Frontier Ruckus, we wanted horns on that. He was the guy that really, you know, seemed like the man for the job.
Well, it sounds like a lot of those connections, I mean, it was through friends of friends, and you've been touring around the state. You've done Huntington Music and Arts Festival, so you've played to some of these folks before. You've probably been on tour with them too.
Yeah.
Did those connections with those folks start up a few years ago? Have you known most of these folks for a while now?
Yeah, I guess for the most part. Like, I've known Bud since, I think I was 17 and he was 19. This was before he was an American Minor, actually. And so we've been friends for a really, really long time. So I think, I mean, speaking at least for myself, I'm really happy that we finally get to work together. It's something I've always wanted to do, and I'm so excited that we finally get to do that. And then, yeah, I've known Adam, I guess, for, gosh, I want to say 7 or 8 years now at this point. This was kind of when I sort of met him when the Demon Beat were playing, and I met all those guys at that point. And I've known, you know, you mentioned, like, the Brain Rat crew and stuff. Like, I've known Max for probably an equally long amount of time, and actually same thing with Ian as well. Like, I've known him for, you know, quite a few years, really. That's, you know, that's the thing about it. You know, friendships just kind of happen organically, that sort of stuff. And, you know, you play shows and you meet people and you hang out and you become friends, and it's really nice. Like, that's kind of the one, it's the one really nice aspect of music that you don't really hear people talking about a lot, is that it's a great opportunity to meet people. It's really a lot of fun.
Yeah. And that's what I've noticed over the last, you know, 2.5 years, however long I've been doing this gig, is that I've been meeting so many people from around the state. And granted, I might not see them as much in person. Like with you, I see you maybe once every few months,
sure,
as opposed to someone in Charleston. But it's still nice. And I've met so many nice and welcoming and positive people, and with cool stories. I mean, talking to Bud or anyone in Huntington is just a cool experience. And not to use hashtag blessed on this, but I really am. I am kind of blessed to be able to be a part of something that's just really, really interesting. So
Justin Bieber was right. We're blessed.
Damn it, I hate him. I like Justin Timberlake better. The better Justin.
Well, I mean,
are you saying that you're a Justified fan? Are you more of an NSYNC-er? Are you 2020?
Honestly, if we're gonna talk about the boy bands of the late 90s, I will unironically tell you that I think I Want It That Way is one of the best pop songs ever written.
I did that karaoke in Grand Marais, Minnesota, in front of my Mountain Stage coworkers, and I think blew their minds, because that was the first time I'd ever done karaoke in front of them, and I chose that song, not telling them what it was, and then I belted that song. Like, the house just blew up from my dancing. I did choreo. I did singing. I got into the audience. I tried to force people to join me, and they got confused. It was the best. And people still talk about it. Like, it is.
We're still talking about it now.
Yeah, we are. Damn straight we are. Yeah, so actually, if after your June 26th Mountain Stage, if you do want to do karaoke to that at the Empty Glass, please let me join you on stage. I would be honored.
Okay. It's a date. Let's do it.
Avenue, Stoney Cooper. He used to change the strings on his guitar. Stoney sang on the radio up in Wheeling. Said Grandpa was a Moundsville guard.
You are making, I'm going to say your NPR Mountain Stage main stage debut on June 26th. And I say that because you've been on the show before. You just haven't been front and center.
Right. This is my fourth time, I guess.
Okay. And what were the other three times previously?
Let's see. I did it with Todd Burge in 2006. And then Southeast Engine did it in 2011. And then I did it again with Todd in 2012. But yeah, this is the first time kind of under the guises of doing my own material.
Do you know, I mean, you've been on the show, you've attended shows, you're friends with folks that work on the show. Do you know what to expect on June 26th? Are you mentally prepared for that?
We're obviously really excited about it, and we're doing that rarest of things in our band where we're practicing. That's good. We've decided what we're going to play, and we're sharpening our knives and getting ready for the street fight.
And you're bringing along with you, I guess, Bud Carroll, Ian Thornton, Rod Elkins, and Adam Meisterhans. Is that correct?
Yeah, it's the full five piece lineup of the group.
Cool. And you're just going as William Matheny. You're not going as William Matheny and the Strange Constellations, or you're not going to refer to them as like the Strange Constellations on stage.
I probably will. that's usually what I do.
Are they strange stars? Like, why are they strange constellations?
I wanted some content. Well, initially, I decided that was going to be the name of the record. And I wanted some, like, continuity sort of between the album and the name of the band, you know? And I sort of went with that. And the name of the album actually comes from this thing in Moby Dick where Ishmael talks about, in the book, he's talking about being in the Southern Hemisphere, like under different stars, you know? And what I always kind of took that to mean was sort of like if you are astrologically inclined at all, like you're not really sure about the star signs that are guiding you all the time. And that's kind of, it's sort of like one of the main themes of the record. And that's, you know, it's what the title means, you know? And then we just wanted to, you know, kind of tie the name of the band in with that. In terms of West Virginia themed things, the working title of the band was going to be the Golden Horseshoes.
Aww.
Because, yeah, you know, they're sort of all stars.
Getting back to the record, there's one song I wanted to bring up with you from it, from Strange Constellations, and that's the song My Grandfather Knew Stoney Cooper.
Yeah.
Obviously, that of all the songs on the record, that one I would argue is probably the one most steeped in West Virginia, just West Virginia culture and references.
Sure.
Can you talk about the song and who this Stoney Cooper type was?
Oh, yeah. Well, that's I usually have to get a little VH1 Storytellers when I, you know, when I do this one. Because most of the time, like, unfortunately, Stoney Cooper isn't a name that a lot of people know anymore, you know. But he and his wife, Wilma Lee, we're from the Elkins area, and they had a group, you know, Stoney and Wilma Lee Cooper and the Clinch Mountain Clan was the name of their band, and they kind of performed in the area forever. Like, they were here for a long time, and then they became kind of like cast regulars on the Wheeling Jamboree for a few years. And then eventually they kind of made the big move to Nashville and got signed to RCA, and they became members of the Grand Ole Opry, and they had a run of hits, and they did like both secular and non-secular music, and you know they were a big deal, you know. And my grandfather's band, the one that I talked about earlier, they kind of ran in the same circles back when, you know, Stoney Cooper was a local to regional act. They played a lot of shows together. And anyway, they would come home every year to the Fairmont Theater in Fairmont and, you know, like conquering heroes. And they would, you know, sell the place out for multiple nights in a row. And my grandfather's band would open for them every night. At one point, Stoney Cooper broke a guitar string, and my grandfather gave him his guitar. He finished the set with that. And I kind of joked that it was, in addition to making a record and being a really good singer, my grandfather was also a guitar tech to the stars, I guess.
Well, in the song, you say you have a couple lines about how your grandfather would say that Stoney Cooper made it all the way to Tennessee, and it sounded like your grandfather, I wouldn't say resented that, but maybe kind of felt left behind, being stuck in West Virginia as Stoney went off to do the Grand Ole Opry and have some fame in the 50s and 60s. Would you say that's correct?
Well, my grandfather had a stroke when he was 33, and that it paralyzed the left side of his body. So he had to stop playing guitar, and he couldn't really sing anymore either. He could sort of, but it wasn't what he used to be. It's not at all a song about resentment, but it's, I guess it's just kind of like a song about the paths of people crossing and what happens then, My grandmother used to say that bad things happen when you're 33 because that's when Jesus was crucified, and that was also when my grandfather had a stroke.
Oh.
So that was always a thing that I thought about a lot, I guess. I need to watch out for that. It's coming soon.
Well, I was going to say, you're about to turn 33, or are you 31 right now?
In a couple years.
Okay.
But, I guess I need to be on the ready early.
Well, I've heard that once you turn 30, your body shuts down. So, that's what Dave Mistich here at Public Broadcasting always says, is that once you turn 30, your body just shuts down completely.
It's like Logan's Run.
Yeah.
But yeah, I guess, that was, that song to me is not really, it's not really a song about resentment, but just sort of a song about how things can happen to people that you don't really plan, and, lives can go in different directions, but there's still some sort of connection between the two.
Do you see yourself following a Stoney Cooper kind of path and moving away from the state anytime soon, or do you see yourself staying in Morgantown in West Virginia?
Well, as I just said, I don't know the stars that guide me. my partner and I have been here for a really long time, and a lot of that kind of comes down to jobs, kind of where she may end up landing long term. But that's one of those things where I don't really, honestly, I haven't really planned about it, that much in the sense of, because I could do what I do anywhere. I love where I am, and I love other places too, So that's, I'm kind of all good with all of it. At the end of the day, the thing about being like a working musician, especially kind of in today's climate, if you're going to play indie rock music or if you're going to be working in that kind of way, you have to be everywhere anyhow. So if you're going to be on the road for 200 days a year, which kind of what we're gearing up to do here, it doesn't really matter where you come home to, because you're still out there, and you're still going to be in every city in America three times a year. Like, you might as well be home where you like it.
Do you see any changes in the scene, in West Virginia scene, that would encourage you to maybe stay here a little bit longer?
Oh, well, I mean, I can't speak highly enough about how good it is right now. It's always been great, is the thing. And, there've always been great bands and some really great places to play. And I'm just really proud of the work that everyone's doing, like my peer group. I'm very happy that everyone is really working so hard and, getting some traction and doing the thing. And I think I'm imagining probably in all of the conversations that you're having regarding like West Virginia music, probably the thing that you probably talk about a lot is sort of like kind of the State of the Union address for the music scene or what the best thing for everyone is. And really, I think the best thing any of us can do is just keep working. And the nice thing about it is that I think any success that one act has, it sort of translates to some success and, kind of leverage for other people, too.
Agreed, yeah.
It just lends credibility to what everyone else is doing. Like, it might be really romantic to be a lone voice in the wilderness, but in the short term, it helps to hang out with your friends.
Yeah, and that's what I've kind of realized with Huntington, is that by having such a close-knit group of individuals that, Ona, Tyler Childers, and then up-and-coming like Of the Dell or Horse Traders, just when one is raised, the others are just raised accordingly. So they kind of bring everyone up.
Yeah, absolutely. It helps you a lot to be able to say, well, I'm from here, and, these people are from here. You've probably heard of them.
Yeah. Well, I guess beyond the just keep working, do you have any other advice for artists in West Virginia that if they are wanting to, you know, get in the scene and make a name for themselves?
Well, I'd hardly call myself really qualified to give anyone advice, but beyond that, no, just keep working and don't get discouraged, I guess is the only thing I could really say to people. And that's the really important thing. Just keep working and everything will improve. And don't let it get you down.
Yeah. Well, I've been seeing so, you know, the struggle to stay thing has been such a big thing over the last year. And I feel like it should actually change over to, you know, maybe something a little bit more positive that's like things to make, or I don't know, that's stupid. Don't use that hashtag. But it just is something
I think that's a great thing. Not necessarily that hashtag.
Yeah.
But and I say that as a friend. I think there's really something to that. And I think that, I don't know if that happens kind of when you get to a certain point, but I'm seeing this more so like that anywhere you want to live, you can find ways to make that cool and you can find ways to make it work. And I think that, you know, there's sort of this attitude of if you didn't like immediately just move to Brooklyn when you were 23, like you somehow like failed or something. Or something like that. Maybe I'm not verbalizing.
No, I totally agree. Like, if you haven't moved out of state to a bigger city and made a name for yourself there or done something there, then what have you done?
Exactly. Yeah. Like, what have you done? Well, I just go to this bigger city all the time. That's all, you know? Maybe I don't, like, pay rent there. But, yeah, I think there's really something to that. And I've met a lot of people recently who are pretty into the idea of, you know, creating something really good where they are. And I think that's probably more important than anything else.
Is there anything else that you'd like to share or anything that I forgot to ask about in this interview?
I know you usually ask about pepperoni rolls. So go ahead and give a shout out to Colas Sestino's in Fairmont, West Virginia.
You're right.
Keep on making a superb product, guys.
That's something that I haven't done. I've interviewed 3 people for this little West Virginia music interview series, and I haven't brought up pepperoni rolls at all. No one's brought them up, so thank you for breaking that cycle.
All right. I'll talk about it if no one wants to.
Okay, so pepperoni rolls. I got that down. I'm writing it down. William, this was a really fun interview. You've been on my list for, I don't know, like a year or two now just to talk with, and I'm happy that the opportunity came up for me to, you know, be able to pick your brain about things and stuff and likewise and such. So
thanks
thank
for
you.
Talking to me. This was a lot of fun.
William Matheny's newest release is Blood Moon Singer, which is a preview of his upcoming full-length release, Strange Constellations. You can hear his music on williammatheny.com. Catch him on Mountain Stage on June 26, 2016, alongside his music friends Bud Carroll, Ian Thornton, Rod Elkins, and Adam Meisterhans. Hear more hashtag WV Music on A Change of Tune, airing Saturday nights at 10 on West Virginia Public Broadcasting. And for more hashtag WV Music chats, make sure to go to wvpublic.org/WV Music. I'm Joni Deutsch. Thanks for listening.